The Italian House, written by Teresa Crane and read by Selena Griffiths.
Prologue. The storm had raged for a night and a day. A bitter wind gusted from the north, from the mountains of the Garfagnana. It shrieked about the treeless peaks above the house, buffeted the wooded hillsides, drove rain in drenching sheets against roof and wall and shuttered window. It shredded the ragged, fast-moving clouds that streamed about the hilltops and boiled down into the valleys. It whispered through the house like a chill breath, stirring a paper here, a silken fringe there. A shutter banged monotonously, clattering back and forth with a manic, metronomic regularity. This was a gentle house, built for quiet sunshine and summer breezes. Now it loomed dark upon the hillside, grimly braving the onslaught. The single light that gleamed fitfully in an upstairs window, the only sign of life. The figure at the window was so still, he might have been carved from stone. The smoke from the cigarette that he held between slim, nicotine-stained fingers wreathed about him. He had been standing for some time now, his attention upon a donkey cart that toiled up the winding track below in the half-light of the stormy evening, its small lamps glimmering through the streaming rain. Every so often it would disappear beneath the wildly tossing branches of a stand of chestnut trees, to emerge moments later, plodding at a dogged and dispirited pace, inching up the hillside, closer to that spot where the mountain track forked sharply to come up to the house. In the days that he had been here, no one had turned at that fork. The hamlet of San Marco lay a half mile or so further on, and it was to there that most traffic on this little-used way would be heading. But something held him now, watching as the ancient vehicle struggled on. When, on reaching the fork, the driver swung the shambling donkey in an awkward, muddy arc and set him at the final climb to the house, the man at the window stirred at last, the neat head lifting sharply, narrow eyes narrowing further. He stood for a single suspended moment, poised and still, before turning swiftly, stubbing out his cigarette, reaching for the lamp that stood upon the table behind him, and extinguishing its glow. The wind that had eased for a moment buffeted again, and somewhere within the dark house, a door slammed in the sudden draft. Chapter 1. Hastings, England, December 1922. Carrie Stowe, head down against the gale-driven rain, battled around the corner of Barrymore Walk, one hand grabbing at the flying skirts of her coat, the other awkwardly clamping her small hat to her head. Thank the Lord that number 11 was only a short way down the long, straight street that seemed to funnel the channel winds and increase their strength fivefold. Street lamps glimmered in the dusk. The windows in the smart new brick facades of the houses of the walk glared with garish and self-confident electric light. The neat, clean interiors glimpsed from the pavement, appearing like a series of bright-lit pictures, almost clinical behind their glass, somehow safely set apart from the elements. Carrie's cheeks stung with the cold. She was surprisingly tired. The train ride back from London had seemed interminable. The effort to contain her excitement, to prevent herself from hoping too much, had all but exhausted her. "You mean the house is mine?" she had asked, the thing so much beyond her grasp that the words had verged on the disbelieving. "Mine?" Mr. Bagshaw of Bagshaw, Bagshaw and Stott Solicitors had nodded patiently. "As I said, yours, Mrs. Stowe, entirely yours, under the conditions which I hope I have made clear to you."
Yes, of course.
Far from making the conditions clear, Mr. Bagshaw had given the distinct impression that the arcane workings of Italian law were as much beyond him as they were beyond Carrie herself. His every disapproving sniff had indicated just how low was his opinion of such alien, if apparently legal, skullduggery. But still, "Yes," he had said, "yes, the house is yours.